In today's gospel, I want to focus on what comes right at the end here. Our Lord says, in this very last line of the gospel, that he came so that we might have life and have it more abundantly. And I want to use that as my starting point because I think it's safe to say that every single one of us, and not just every single one of us here, but every single human being whoever has been or whoever will be in every part of the world and every time has always wanted an abundant life. I think that's safe to say that the human heart seeks a fulfillment beyond itself, that everyone wants an abundant life. And using that as our starting ground, I would submit to you then that the question then is not, do we want an abundant life? You know, some people do, some people don't. No, I think, again, everyone wants that, but what do we do to have that? What do we do to get that? Is there something that we have to do? Is there a certain way we have to live? And I think society today proposes to us all sorts of different things to do, ways to live, to have that abundant life. And let's go through some examples. And these are just a few, and there are so many more. But doesn't society tell us, for instance, that if you really want to be happy and fulfilled, you know, that you should have a good amount of money in the bank, right? And this is why we talk about people who are workaholics. You know, why do they work? Well, they work for some ideal, just to have money in the bank. Well, you're never going to get to use that money if you're always working. But society tells us this, right? You always need a certain amount of money. The more money, the better. But not just money, possessions as well. You know, to have the newest, the best, the biggest, the brightest. And how about with relationships? That we should have the prettiest boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse. And when they're not that anymore, they should get some kind of cosmetic surgery, right? Or if that doesn't work, let's just get rid of them and get someone else. Right? And that's why the divorce rate is something like 50%. Isn't this what society tells us? That these are the different things that we need to be happy and fulfilled. And what's interesting is in the first and second readings, we hear from St. Peter, the first pope. And at the end of that first reading from the Acts of the Apostles, he tells them, he says, save yourselves from this corrupt generation. And I have to wonder, if he called that generation, that society, that culture, back then, 2,000 years ago, corrupt, I can't even imagine what he might call this culture, this society, this generation, that seeks fulfillment, that seeks this abundant life in all of these other ways. Now again, we don't want to blame people for seeking that. There is something deep within us that is given by God that seeks to have that abundant life. You know, there's that saying that all of us have a God-shaped hole in our hearts. All of us have a God-shaped hole that only God can fill. And the problem is we recognize that God-shaped hole, but we don't recognize that it's God-shaped and that only God can fill it. And we try to fill it with all these other things. And what we realize is that no amount, you could be, you know, the top of society and have all of those different things I named off before and more, and still that God-shaped hole would not be filled, right? This Sunday, this fourth Sunday of Easter, as we continue through the Easter season, the Church designates this Sunday as Good Shepherd Sunday. And we see this theme of sheep and shepherds throughout our three readings. And what I would submit to you is that all of us have a shepherd. You know, for some of us in the depths of society's grasp, our shepherd is ourselves. We shepherd ourselves. We do what we want, when we want, how we want it. And society gives us cues, you know, again, like I said before, the most, the biggest, the best, the brightest, the newest, the prettiest. Which, by the way, are not bad things in and of themselves. Material things are not bad things. They are given to us to use insofar as they help us to get to God, and we are called to reject them insofar as they pull us away from God. But just a little disclaimer there. They're not bad in and of themselves. They're not intrinsically evil. And for some of us, perhaps our shepherd is society. Perhaps we just blindly follow what they tell us. Perhaps some of us, our shepherd is some political figure or some ideal. But as Christians, we are called to have Jesus Christ as our shepherd. And, you know, I think sometimes we need to kind of walk ourselves through this logically, that God made us, and therefore he knows us better than we know ourselves. And because he knows us better than we know ourselves, he knows what's going to make us truly happy, truly fulfilled, experiencing that abundance of life. He knows what's going to do that for us better than what we think is going to do it for us, better than what society tells us is going to do it for us. Why? Because he made us. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And because he loves us, he is only ever going to ask us to do that which he already knows is going to make us happy and fulfilled. Right? Again, I think sometimes we have to logically remind ourselves, walk through this in our head and remind ourselves that, you know, wait a minute, doing God's will is in my own best interest. Because sometimes don't we approach religion and faith and doing God's will as a bunch of rules? Isn't that how the media always likes to portray the Catholic Church? Oh, you have all those rules. But we know that, no, it's not a matter of the church or God trying to impose arbitrary rules on us, but yes, the church and God does tell us to do certain things and to not do certain things because they know that it's good or bad for us. They know, despite what we think, that it is or is not going to make us truly happy and fulfilled and experience that abundant life that Christ came to give us. The other thing about this Sunday, in addition to be called Good Shepherd Sunday, because of that, it is designated as the World Day of Prayer for Vocations. And I would encourage all of us to continue to pray, as I know you already do, and I would encourage all of us to continue to pray that God may call many young men and women to priesthood, to religious life, but also to be good and holy husbands and wives, to the sacrament of holy matrimony, which is, of course, the source and font of all other vocations. And as I've said before, I think the real vocations crisis is that we don't have as many good and holy families as we need. That's why we don't have as many good and holy priests and nuns as we need. But there's that saying that we're supposed to pray as if everything depended on God and act as if everything depended on us, right? So, again, I encourage you to pray and to continue that for good and holy vocations, but then to support that with your actions, to encourage young men and women who are discerning God's will for them, to remind them, as often we ourselves need to be reminded, and we need to remind each other what we just walked through, that doing God's will is in our own interest. We need to remind each other, and especially our young people, to reject those things that society tells us is going to make us truly happy and fulfilled. To use the material things of this world, yes, insofar as they're good and helpful, but to reject them otherwise, and to not fall into this trap that those are the things that we need to be happy. Because before we can even discern God's will, we have to be able to hear his voice, as we hear in this gospel today. The sheep recognize his voice. Do we recognize God's voice? If we're not even hearing his voice because we are so distracted, because we live in a society that is so overstimulating, that we become kind of numb. It becomes hard to hear God's voice, let alone, once we think we've heard it, to then discern it and to really figure out, is this God talking to me or is this not? You know, some of you know I was on retreat this past week. I went down to the Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine in Guadalupe, Mexico, and I stayed with this wonderful order of nuns that has a convent down there, and they run a retreat house attached to the convent. So our group was able to stay with them for very, very inexpensively. And I was talking with one of the nuns after lunch one day, Sister Corazon, and she was asking about me, and we were just kind of telling each other about ourselves. And I had asked her, I said, so how long... She said, oh, you look like a young priest. How are you a priest? Are you sure you're a priest? I said, yes, I'm a priest. How long have you been a priest? Oh, about a year almost, you know. And I said, how long have you been a nun? How long are you professed now as a nun? And she said, 40 years. And at first I thought I misheard the Spanish, and I asked her again, and she said, no, 40. I said, wow, 40. And so I asked her, I said, she doesn't look very old, and I said, when did you start? You must have started really young. 14. She went into the convent at 14. And just to get rid of any ideas that, oh, well, maybe she was forced into this, or, you know, poverty or whatever else. No, she came from a very good background. And I want to use her real briefly in conclusion here as an example of what I'm talking about, because she heard God's call. And she rejected what society told her would be necessary for this abundant life. When society told her, you know, stay comfortable, stay with your family and friends, you have that secure network, why would you want to go off to the other part of the country and move in with these people you've never met before? She rejected that idea. She rejected this idea that she should just enjoy the wealth into which she was born and kind of live off of that. And she said, she takes this vow of poverty. She rejects this idea that we are to be our own master and to do whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want it, to take the vow of obedience. And then how about celibacy? You know, obviously marriage and family is a good, and that's why offering it up is a sacrifice. If it weren't a good, it wouldn't be a sacrifice. And that's why it's so much of a sacrifice, because it is such a good, that she said, despite my own natural desires for marriage, to have a husband, to have children, I feel called to this, and I'm going to be celibate and take this vow of chastity, this vow of celibate chastity, and be a bride of Christ and be married to him as a symbol of the church, and to have spiritual children. So the point I'm making is that in society's eyes, she is just an anomaly. Because here she is, one of the happiest people you would ever have met. This happy, bouncy nun, approaching 40 years as a nun, joined when she was 14, and yet going against everything that society tells us that we need to have this abundant life. And here she is. And why? Because she recognized that in order to be truly happy and truly fulfilled, she needed Jesus Christ to be her shepherd. She needed to do his will. And I'm sure it was not an easy decision. I didn't get to talk to her too much more about her own discernment, but I'm sure with her, as I know it was with my case, and as I'm sure it has been with many of you in terms of following God's will in your own lives, whatever that may be, where sometimes we do kind of have to really remind ourselves and walk ourselves logically through this, that, wait a minute, it's in my own interest to do God's will and to reject what society tells me, to reject all of these other shepherds, and to have Jesus Christ as my shepherd. So this Sunday, I encourage all of us to continue to pray for vocation, but also then to act accordingly, to encourage our young people especially, who are discerning God's will, that before they can even get to that point, that they make sure they are hearing the shepherd's voice, that they are allowing him to be their shepherd, and to get to know him and to hear his voice.